The Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 1, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jadmadhyasya yaton vayat. Itaratas jarte shribhya surat. Tene pramahidaya adikavaye muyanti yad suryaha. Tejo vari madam yata vinamayo yata tisagom risha. Tamna swena sedana rasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Vipasindubhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we had a more intensive study of the various verses. So what I'd like to do now is go over the Bhagavatam and try to put each chapter on in one or two lectures. Perhaps this first chapter will need maybe two lectures, because the first three verses have such extensive purports and meanings. So we'll go over this first verse. And perhaps today on one tape we can put the first three verses and then the rest of the chapter on another tape. because this is a very important verse, we've discussed this before, that in really ascertaining the main points, the conclusions of even a chapter or even a paragraph, what to speak of a book, you look what's put first and what's put last. The introduction and the conclusion. So obviously the first verse has a lot of meaning. In one sense, well, I told you also that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he spoke for 3 months on the first verse, because it describes the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It describes also the theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the consequences in one's life in terms of that conclusion. Very significant to understand the absolute truth. And when you understand the absolute truth, then you have to guide your life by that principle. It's a very, very significant verse, which describes the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I should mention that the first three verses are directly spoken by Srila Vyasadeva. The rest of the verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Vyasadeva describing someone else speaking. But the first three verses are spoken by Srila Vyasadeva, and they are the prelude to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in that prelude, Srila Vyasadeva very, very clearly states the goal and the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first verse deals with the goal of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That also is the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the subject of the absolute truth is exclusively and uncompromisingly discussed within this scripture. So it has special significance. In fact, in many ways, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam could expand from this first verse. So we'll try to go over this word by word, or phrase by phrase. So we'll begin with the beginning. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this is a very significant phrase, because it directly declares the nature of the absolute truth. Bhagavate means unto the personality of Godhead. Om Namo Bhagavate. He is offering obeisances. Two things are happening here. He is declaring the person of the absolute truth, specifically stating who that absolute truth is. Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, means Krishna. So he's directly stating who is the absolute truth. We look in the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes how this is stated, this is substantiated, not just by Vyasadeva's statements, but it's substantiated in all the Vedas and by all authorities. Vedaista sarveham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. Krishna says, by all the Vedas I am to be known. So it's not just Vyasadeva's statement, but it's substantiated. It's substantiated, but it directly states who he is. And there's submission. Because he understands that that person, Krishna, is the absolute truth. Therefore, he fully submits to that absolute truth. Because we are part of that absolute truth. And the part is meant for service to the whole. So the whole or complete absolute truth is Krishna. And therefore, our duty is to submit to him. Because we are his part and parcel, and we are made for his service. The part is made for the service of the whole. Therefore, it is our duty, or our dharma, or our religion, to submit to the absolute truth, who is Krishna. And this is the essence of the Krishna conscious philosophy. The essence of the Krishna conscious philosophy is that our duty, or what we should be doing, is determined by our eternal nature. Our eternal nature is determined by what we are made of and what we're made for. What we're made of is Krishna's energy. What we're made for is Krishna's service. So this is the essence of dharma, the essence of religion, the essence of our duty. To understand the position of God, to understand the identity of God, and therefore to understand our relationship in relation, our relationship to God. So nama means offering obeisances. This word namaha also can mean namaha. It can mean without ahankara. Without ahankara, without the false conception that I am the doer, that I am the controller, that I am the enjoyer, without the false conception, without the illusion about ourselves. We should surrender to Krishna in knowledge that I am not the controller, I am not the enjoyer, but I am the part and parcel of God, and I am meant for His service. So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now one other significant point that Srila Prabhupada will bring out in the purport is that truth, Prabhupada says the author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. In other words, people want to know the absolute truth. He says that Lord Krishna is the origin of all creations. So I discussed this before also, and I'd like to repeat it, that teaching and preaching is not just a question of what you say, but is a question of what is understood by what you say. So preacher is very careful to understand the condition of his audience and then present truth in a very careful way so that people will understand the truth. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, when he was presenting the Vedas, didn't directly and boldly state that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and the goal of life is to surrender to Him. Because he's presenting the absolute truth to people who are conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. And they may not be able to conceptualize that truth or have sufficient detachment to accept it. I always remember Srila Prabhupada in the garden in LA where he spoke to those scholars, Krishna is God, accept it. Why won't you accept? But we cannot do that. Prabhupada is very bold, and also you would understand if what the scholars were thinking. How are they trying to understand that? It's very difficult. Anyway, Prabhupada was very bold in that particular instance, but it's very, very rare to present truth directly because people don't have the qualification to understand it. Even we see in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna spoke to Arjuna, he kept on telling him the truth, but he had to explain it for 3 or 4 chapters before Arjuna understood really what he was talking about. He kept on confusing the same thing. Krishna was speaking the truth, but Arjuna wasn't understanding the truth. It took some explanation. And especially since people come to this material world, icha dvesha samutena dvanda mohena bharata, they come to this material world overcome with the dualities of desire and hate. That's their constitution in this world. So hate means envy. Hate means that we want to be the enjoyer and the controller. To be the enjoyer and the controller is not just a sensuous experience, but the enjoyment is the sense of superiority. And therefore, with this person with this strong desire to be the enjoyer and the controller, envy is natural. It's hard for him to enjoy if he sees someone that is better than him. Because the sense of enjoyment is that I am great, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So therefore, generally, when people become frustrated with the material world, they initially take to an impersonal, concept of the absolute truth. Because of their envy, they won't transcend this material world if the focus of their concentration is a person who is greater than them. So you can see, even when someone has some atmagyan, he understands the futility of this world, by psychology, it's hard for him to focus his consciousness above the world if the presentation of the absolute truth is a person, because of envy. And what to speak of philosophies that entail that the goal of life is bhakti, which is to satisfy the senses of God without any selfish motive. So therefore, to preach to people generally you have to present a very, very broad concept of the absolute truth that accommodates their conceptions. You have to, just like sometimes you see, you know, we will preach not directly about Krishna, but you're not the body, to attract people to a philosophical concept that they may understand. And even sometimes we just have to talk about vegetarianism, just to get people to have faith in our knowledge and guidance. Then maybe we can preach you're not the body. We don't begin preaching generally with God. Krishna is God, accept it. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I gave the example, if you come home to your mother and you speak the truth to her and she says, oh, my son, and you say, I'm not your son and you're not my mother. And you preach the philosophy of Krishna consciousness that you're not the body. Then she will not, the result is of what you, the truth you spoke is that she'll have a great what you've communicated is a great misconception. That maybe perhaps devotees are heartless or impersonal or fanatic or crazy. So therefore, there's always strategy in presenting the truth according to the condition of the audience. So it's very, very startling. And that Vyasadeva, at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, states this so boldly and directly, that Krishna is God, accept it. Now, this first statement, I mentioned too that each of these statements have volumes of meaning. There's a history behind this statement also, and the history is the history of the Bhagavatam. And the history of the Bhagavatam is that Srila Vyasadeva was entrusted to assimilate and compile the spoken Vedas in a way to liberate the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga. And he made a strategy that was indirect. And the problem with a strategy that's indirect is that it's okay if it brings someone to the goal. But if you preach indirectly and they never get to the goal, then what you've done is useless. You may make friends with people, you may do so many different activities, but it has to get to the goal. Otherwise, it does not have any value. And I want to briefly explain that history. Therefore, Vyasadeva, because his mission was to liberate the conditioned souls, and he presented the Vedas in such an indirect way that people would actually, people were not qualified to go through that indirect process, nor, even if they were qualified in Kali Yuga, would they have time to complete it. So therefore, he was feeling despondent because he felt he lacked some accomplishment. His duty was to present the absolute truth for the liberation of the conditioned souls. He was feeling some lack of accomplishment. And then his spiritual master came and told him the problem. You haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna. And therefore, what you've done is worthless. And then taking the instructions of his spiritual master to heart, after he had compiled all the Vedas, he went into meditation. And in his meditation, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Paniyate Male Apashyat Purusham Purnam Maya Chittad Apasthayam, by the linking process of devotional service, Apashyat Purusham Purnam, he saw the absolute truth directly. He saw the personality of Godhead with the illusory energy under the control of Krishna. In other words, he didn't see Mayavad conception. The Mayavad conception is that Brahman, covered by illusion, becomes the Ishvara and the Jiva. So Ishvara is under Maya. but he saw Maya under Ishvara. So he saw the Supreme Personality of God. He saw Krishna. He saw Krishna. He saw Krishna's energies. He not only saw the external energy, but he also saw the internal energy, which means that he saw Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, because Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are the exchange of Krishna with his internal potency, specifically his Ladini Shakti, his pleasure potency. So he saw the Absolute Truth directly, and by seeing it directly in his deep meditation, he realized that what his spiritual master, he realized the truth of his spiritual master's instruction that you haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna for the liberation of the conditioned soul. Because he also saw that the living entity was suffering because he was thinking himself Maya. He was thinking himself a product of the material energy, and that was the cause of the living entity's suffering. And therefore he saw that the process to free the living entity from suffering is to change the desire that caused the living entity to identify with the material energy. And the desire that causes the living entity to identify with the material energy is the desire not to want to be a devotee, but to be the enjoyer and the controller, which can only be fulfilled in the illusion that I am the body. And therefore he saw the solution, change that desire by directly presenting Krishna's pastimes, and therefore injecting within the heart of the conditioned souls the desire to serve Krishna and be his devotee. And that would liberate them from all miseries. So he became very inspired, and therefore this first verse, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was not after becoming chastised by the Guru for compromising, he took a very uncompromising approach. Very uncompromising approach because of the history of his chastisement and because of the history of his meditation. And therefore he said, Vasudevaya. Vasudev means the son of Vasudev. So Krishna is specifically the son of Vasudev. But Prabhupada in the purport here explains, in the verse, O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. The Prabhupada said it's not that Vasudev means the son of Vasudeva, but it also means the all-pervading personality of Godhead. And this is the essence of the Krishna conscious philosophy. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. That although Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a person Krishna, that person Krishna is not limited. He's all-pervading. Just as Mother Yasoda saw within the mouth, Mother Yasoda saw within the mouth of his mother. No, Mother Yasoda saw within the mouth of Krishna everything outside of Krishna, including her and all the universes. That's our philosophy, that within the limited is the unlimited. And that in God's perfection, in his inconceivable potency, he's pervading everywhere, but he still remains a person. And this was Vyasadeva's vision. So this is a Chintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the perfect conception of the Absolute Truth. That God is simultaneously one and different from everything. This word, Vasudev, Krishna's father, is also a hint at the perfectional stage that we have to come to by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. The perfectional stage is called Vasudev, named after Krishna's father. Because Krishna's father, Krishna appeared in the heart of his father because of his father's pure desire to serve him.
So when we have a pure desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will come into our hearts. The Bhagavatam is the process by which the absolute truth can take birth within our heart. Vishuddha Sattvam Vasudeva Shabditam. That the state of consciousness, which is called Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Sattva doesn't mean actually goodness as much as it means that the consciousness is sattva, composed of truth, kind of sattva. It's pure. It's imbued with Krishna's internal potency. Vishuddha sattvam vasudeva shabditam. That's called vasudeva consciousness. So we'll go now word by word and try to understand the import of this verse. So the first part we just described states that Krishna is God. It describes who is God. Now Vyasadeva will explain the characteristics of God. The characteristics of God are the characteristics of Krishna, because he already described that Krishna is God. So what are the characteristics of God that distinguish him from any other person? In other words, Krishna is God, but why is he God? He's God because these are his characteristics. These are his characteristics, which are the characteristics of God. And therefore they differentiate that person, Krishna, from any other person. And therefore, with the conclusion is, param satyam, satyam param dhimahi, therefore we should meditate on him who's the absolute. So, jadmad yasya yataha. This is also one statement from the Vedanta Sutra, which is Srila Vyasadeva's commentary on the Vedas in sutra form. So also the Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the author of the Vedanta Sutra in the maturity of his realization. So jadmad yasya yataha. It is, first of all, it mentioned again that he was the son of Vasudeva. So when you have the conception of the son of someone, you have the conception of someone who is relative, because his existence was, first of all, his existence comes in time, and he is born, which means that there's a time he was not existing, which means that he's not God. So it's a very limiting, to say that he's the son of a particular person appears to be a very limiting concept of Krishna. So because he said he was the son of Vasudeva, Therefore, Vyasadeva clarifies it in the next word. It is from him whom everything else is coming. Krishna is born of Vasudeva, but it's from Krishna that everything else is born. Janmad, yasya. Janma means creation. Adi means also everything else. Manifested yataha. It's from that person, Krishna, whom everything else is coming, even his father. And this is the definition of, this is the definition of God. The definition of God is he whom everything else is coming from. I told that story before, Prabhupada, and this Irish poet O'Grady, who asked Srila Prabhupada a question. And the question that he asked him was, very nice man. He said, my grandfather would ask me one question. Who created God? And Prabhupada said, first you have to understand who is God. Then you can understand who created God. And then Prabhupada described that God means Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Anadya Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. He has no other cause. That's God. Because as soon as you're caused by something, there's something superior to you. There's something that you're dependent on. So God cannot have a cause. He cannot be caused by his father. So Prabhupada said, as soon as you understand who is God, that he has no other cause, then you can't ask that question, who created God? By definition, God cannot have a creator. Because he cannot be inferior to anything, because the very definition of God is supreme. So jadmad yasya yataha. The characteristic of God is it is he from whom everything else is coming. I also mentioned that, Prabhupada mentions this in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that this also indicates Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. And unless we understand Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, then there'll be a tendency to accept Mayavadi conception. Mayavadi conception is that God must be one, because if there's any transformation of the absolute truth becomes relativized. And therefore, any apparent transformation of his energy into differentiated parts and parcels, or into Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, must be an illusion. In other words, the living entities must be an illusion. That there's individuality of the souls, that they're individual living souls. The Mayavadi philosophy is in that liberation, everything becomes one. It must be an illusion because it would make the absolute truth differentiated or relativized. Prabhupada said that Vyasadeva's conception, which is supported by Jadmad Yasya Yataha, is that Vyasadeva's conception is that that is byproducts, not transformation. That because God has inconceivable potency, even though things emanate from him, he remains he remains absolute, not relativized, not transformed. Just like a touchstone, which can turn unlimited things to gold. Or the sun, which so much heat and light comes from the sun, but yet the sun remains the same. And we have the verse of the Ishopanishads. Om Purnam Adap Purnam Idam Purna Purna Udachite. Even though the Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete, and even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. That's Krishna's position. So therefore, Vyasadeva was wrong. He was wrong that because so many things emanate from God, that must be an illusion because God would become less. But God is not under the laws of material nature. He's the creator of the laws of material nature. Therefore, he has inconceivable potency. And to judge God by our experience of how his laws work is not logical. Spiritual logic, or logic, means that we should understand that God is not confined by any laws. and therefore differentiated parts and parcels can emanate from him, and at the same time he can remain complete.
Okay, we'll continue now going over the various words in the verse, but I just remember that I did not read the translation, so I'm going to read the translation and it'll help us again focus on the verse. O my Lord Krishna, O my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So, as I had mentioned before, that this particular verse describes the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Sri Krishna, states directly who is God. God is Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and then begins to explain the characteristics that differentiate Krishna from anyone else. The characteristics that differentiate Krishna from anyone else are the characteristics of God. Because God is unique, because he's supreme. There's only one God. And these are the characteristics of Krishna, who is God. So Jadmadya Sayataha, we just finished discussing that. It is from he whom everything else manifested. In other words, what Vyasadeva is trying to, what Vyasadeva is explaining in these verses, he's describing that Krishna is God. He's the supreme personality of Godhead, and these are the characteristics. Oh, let us go on. So it's from him whom everything else is coming. Then he states he's abhigya Surat. Abhigya means omniscient, and Surat means self-ruled or fully independent. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in this shloka, the particular words Abhigya and Surat are significant. These two words distinguish the Supreme Lord from all other living beings. So therefore they distinguish Krishna from all other living beings, because these characteristics are being ascribed to Krishna. No other living entity is either abhigya or sarat. That is, no one is either fully cognizant or fully independent. So Prabhupada is explaining. And just before that, not only is he fully cognizant, but he's, it says, anvayat, you can look at the word for that word, itarata, he's directly and indirectly conscious of everything. So basically, when you're indirectly and directly conscious of everything, it means that you're omniscient. What this means is, because directly and indirectly, if Prabhupada explains what this means in the purport, I think I'm going to read it. The chief engineer of a complicated construction does not personally take part in the construction, but he knows every nook and corner because everything is done under his direction. He knows everything about the construction, both directly and indirectly. Similarly, the personality of Godhead, who is the supreme engineer of this cosmic creation, knows every nook and corner, although affairs are being carried out by demigods. Beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, no one is independent in the material creation. The hand of the Lord is seen everywhere. All material elements, as well as all spiritual sparks, emanate from him only. And whatever is created in this material world is but an interaction of the two energies, the material and the spiritual, which emanate from the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. A chemist can manufacture water in the chemical laboratory by mixing hydrogen and oxygen. But in reality, the living entity works in the laboratory under the direction of the Supreme Lord, and the materials with which he works are also supplied by the Supreme Lord. The Lord knows everything directly and indirectly, and he's cognizant of all minute details, and he's fully independent. He is compared to a mine of gold, and the cosmic creations in so many different forms are compared to objects made from the gold, such as gold rings, necklaces, and so on. The gold ring and the gold necklace are qualitatively one, with the gold in mind, but qualitatively the gold in the mind is different. Therefore, the absolute truth is simultaneously one and different. Nothing is absolutely equal with the absolute truth, but at the same time, nothing is independent of the absolute truth. So again, this is, he's indirectly and he's directly and indirectly conscious of everything because of a Achintyaveda Veda Tattva. He's simultaneously one and different with everything. In other words, everything is within the body of God, but simultaneously he's different. In other words, he pervades everything by his energy. At the same time, he's aloof as a person. So the fact that he pervades everything means that he's directly conscious of everything. You know, just like your consciousness pervades your whole body. So therefore, the example is, that I've given before, is if I pinch you, I don't feel the pain, but I'm conscious of that act. You feel the pain because your consciousness pervades your whole body. So you're directly conscious of it, but you also perceive that I did it, that I've done that, so you're indirectly conscious. So in the same way, because everything is, everything is Krishna's energy, he's directly conscious of everything. But at the same time, because he's aloof, he's indirectly conscious. In other words, he's the subject an object of everything. And only God can make the claim that he's the subject and object of everything. Because everything is God's energy. Even in the material world, Umir apo nalo vayu kam mano buddha eva cha ahankara iti yame vina prakrita ashrita. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Everything is Krishna's energy. So therefore, he is directly conscious of everything. Just like you're directly conscious of anything that happens to your body. But you're indirectly conscious because you also can observe it independently also. Well, I can only observe it independently. Prabhupada says, this is refuted in the shloka by Vyasadeva. Since the complete whole or the absolute truth is the source of everything, nothing can be independent of the body of the absolute truth. This is how he's directly consciousness, conscious of everything. Whatever happens to the body
quickly becomes known to the embodied. Similarly, the creation is the body of the absolute whole. Therefore, the absolute knows everything directly and indirectly that happens in the creation. There's also a term called Mugdata and Sarvagya. That Krishna is Sarvagya, he knows everything, and Mugdata, he's forgetful. He has to be forgetful in the sense that even though he knows everything, while Krishna is in his eternal lila, eternal lila of Vrindavan, disturbed by everything that's happening in this material world. So he's mugdata. He's forgetful. But at the same time, he's sarvagya. So he can separate the two also. He can be directly conscious of something and not indirectly conscious. Or even the other way around, we can say it. In other words, he's conscious of everything, but at the same time, he doesn't have to be conscious of everything. Do you understand that? In other words, he's in the spiritual world. He has access to everything. By his energies, he's pervading everything. In that sense, he knows everything. But at the same sense, he can be aloof also. So this is the perfect conception of the absolute truth that's presented right from the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Krishna is pervading everything for his energies. He is the vastu. It'll be in the next verse. The vastu is substance of everything. But even though he's the substance of everything, at the same time he's aloof. This is Krishna. And therefore the conclusion of this knowledge is that Krishna is that God. Krishna is that absolute truth. And therefore we should meditate on Krishna. Because he's the absolute truth, the ultimate reality. And our existence is relative to his. Therefore we should worship Krishna. The word is actually, with the Bhagavad Gita, it's bhajate. Bhajate means must. There's a verse, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena taratmana shradhavam bhajate yomam sune yukta matomata. Of all yogis, the topmost one is he who worships me with faith and devotion and puts his consciousness on me. The word for worship is bhajate, and Prabhupada said it doesn't exactly mean bhajate. Because bhajate means worship, but you can or not worship. But worship means you can worship or not worship. But bhajate means you have to worship, otherwise you have no position. We are Krishna's parts and parcels. We're meant for his service. If we don't do that, we have no position. Just like the hand is part of the body. If it doesn't serve the body, it has no position. So this is what this knowledge is pointing to when we hear it. When we hear about the absolute truth, and then we understand that absolute truth is Krishna, it means that we must worship him. And that's going to be the conclusion here, satyam param dhimahi. That the absolute truth, dhimahi, therefore we must worship the absolute truth, which is Krishna. So it also mentions that he's swarat. Now swarat means self-ruled, fully independent. God cannot have, because he's, God cannot have, a cause outside of himself. He cannot be dependent on anything. In fact, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the subject matter of the 10th canto is called Ashraya. Ashraya means the ultimate shelter. Krishna is the ultimate shelter. Everything else is dependent on Krishna. No one else but Krishna is the Ashraya. Every other living entity is dependent. Outside of themselves, for their existence, sustenance, maintenance, intelligence, knowledge, everything. But that Krishna is self-ruled. He's self-ruled also because he's omniscient. There's nothing that is separate from him. There's something that is separate from you. Then you're not fully independent. Something is separate from you, you're not fully independent. So Krishna is self-ruled. He's fully independent. I'll read the purport. Prabhupada's purports present this so nicely. That is, no one is either fully cognizant or fully independent. Even Brahma has to meditate upon the Supreme Lord in order to create. Then what to speak of great scientists like Einstein? The brains of such a scientist are certainly not the products of any human being. Scientists cannot manufacture such a brain. And what to speak of foolish atheists who defy the authority of the Lord? Even Mayavadi impersonalists who flatter themselves that they can become one with the Lord are neither Abhigya nor Sarat. Such impersonalists undergo severe austerities to acquire knowledge to become one with the Lord. But ultimately they become dependent on some rich disciples who supplies them with money to build monasteries and temples. The prophets say, this is the quality of God. Someone can claim to be God. But then he has to be self-ruled. There can be nothing external to himself that he needs. Otherwise, he's not fully independent, and he's not God. Atheists like Ravana and Aranyakashipu had to undergo severe penance before they can flout the authority of the Lord, but ultimately they were rendered helpless and cannot save themselves when the Lord appeared before them as cruel death. So this is the position of the Supreme Lord, that he's fully independent. For example, it's described here that if someone has to perform austerities, it means that he's not fully independent. You perform austerities to get some shakti or power. It means that power is not within you. So it means you're not fully independent. So this is the quality of the Supreme Lord. Anadya Adya Govinda Sarvakarana. He's the cause of all causes. He has no other cause. There's a story in the fifth canto, fifth chapter of the second canto, that illustrates this very nicely, of Narada Muni. He's the son of Lord Brahma. So he's looking at his father, and his father is very powerful. So he's philosophically speculating that perhaps his father is God. He said, you're so powerful that the universe is in your hand, just like someone holding a walnut. And you're so great, you're so powerful. But then as he's doing this philosophical analysis, he begins to have some doubt because he sees that his father performs austerities. And he gives the example that just like a spider, the web comes from within him. Initially, he was thinking like this. Just like a spider, the web comes from within him. So everything is coming from within you. The spider is self-sufficient. The web comes from him. So he's thinking everything is coming from you like that in creation. But then he sees Lord Brahma meditating, and he has a doubt that if he's meditating, then he's dependent on something outside himself for his power. Why is Brahma performing tapa or austerities? Because the powers are not within him. He has to get the powers outside of himself. And therefore he concludes, I think maybe you're not God. And Brahma was very happy. Brahma was very happy. He said, I thank you. Thank you very much. And then he said, Narayana Paro Veda, Narayana Paro Makha, Narayana Paro Tha. Narayana, Krishna is God. Krishna is God. So the next word also describes Krishna's unique position, because it says, Tene Brahma
Kedaya Adikavaye, the Adikavaye, which is Lord Brahma, the original created being, the original speaker. Brahma here doesn't refer to Lord Brahma. It's the Vedic knowledge. Tene Brahma Hidaya. That it was Krishna who imparted the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. Prabhupada also describes here, according to the Vedic literatures, Brahma, who may be compared to the sun, is not the ultimate creator. It is stated in this shloka that Brahma was taught Vedic knowledge by the personality of Godhead. One may argue that Brahma, being the original living being, could not be inspired because there was no other being living at that time. However, it is stated that Supreme Lord inspired the secondary creator, Brahma, in order to carry out his creative functions. So the supreme intelligence behind all creations is the absolute truth, Sri Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna states that it is he only who superintends the creative energy, Prakriti, which constitutes the totality of matter. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva does not worship Brahma, but the Supreme Lord who guides Brahma in his creative intelligence. So Vyasadeva doesn't come to the conclusion to worship Brahma. He worships Krishna because he understands the source of Brahma's intelligence is Krishna. God means the ultimate source. So that ultimate source is Krishna, and therefore, bhajate, dhimahi, we should worship, we should meditate upon him. Because that is what our position. Just like the hand is part of the body, the hand must serve the body, otherwise has no position. So we must meditate on Krishna to realize our position and relationship to him. We'll go on. Tene Brahma Hidaya Adi Kavi Muyanti Yat Suryaha. So it says, even the great sages are placed into illusion by Krishna, by him. Even the great sages are placed into illusion. So illusion is Krishna's energy. This also, I think I mentioned this just earlier in this particular lecture, this also frees, this also explains clearly how Mayavadi philosophy is not authoritative, because, at least not according to the Bhagavatam, which is the ultimate pramana. Pramana means the method of knowing. We haven't studied this, but perhaps I can add later another tape on Tattva Sandarbha. Because Tattva Sandarbha is an essay by Jiva Goswami where he logically establishes that the topmost pramana method of knowing is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the fruit of all Vedic knowledge. So we're assuming that everyone who's reading this accepts that. So according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Muyanti Yat Suryaha, that it's Krishna's illusory energy. By him, everyone else is being bewildered. And illusion means, Maya means, to see something as separate from Krishna. That's the illusion. Everything is Krishna's energy. To see it is not Krishna's energy, or to see something separate from Krishna, separate from this conception that's being presented here, that Krishna is the vastu, he's the substance of everything. See, illusory energy means that we do not see that. So the energy that covers Brahman, the energy that covers reality, that's also Krishna's energy. And therefore, it's under his control. And that was Vyasadeva's original vision. I think I discussed also a little bit earlier in this class that Vyasadeva's vision was Maya Chittada Pastayam, that the Maya was under the shelter of Krishna. And Mayavadi philosophy means that Brahman
covered by Maya becomes Ishvara, and Jiva becomes the living entity and the Supreme Lord. So this is saying, no, Krishna is that Brahman. Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that's his energy, and it doesn't cover, it's not that illusion covers Brahman and then it becomes Ishvara, but Brahman, or the Absolute Truth, is Krishna, and it's his energy. And he covers the material world to make it look separate from him so the conditioned souls can have a sense of enjoyment and control. He fulfills their desire in that way. Sumuyanti yat Surya, it's by him. This is his energy. Do you have any questions? Any comments on that?
Just that I've been working with a couple of Maya bodies lately, trying to show them how they're not aggressive. I want it to be favorable to Krishna consciousness, but why one should worship Krishna, and because of that definition right there, because he's the Supreme Lord.
Otherwise, if you don't convince them that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, then why will they worship him? And why will we worship Krishna? Therefore, this verse is establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the conclusion is, Satyam Param Dhimahi, we worship that Absolute Truth, who is Krishna. So you can see how this is the basis of Krishna consciousness. Buddha Bhava Samabhata. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matasarvam pavartate. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matasarvam pavartate. Iti bhutva bhajante mam. Buddha bhava samabhata. I am the source of the material and the spiritual worlds. Krishna is saying that. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Therefore, the wise engage in my devotional service. When you have this knowledge, you become a devotee. And if you don't have this knowledge, you won't become a devotee. Why will you become a devotee if you're not convinced that it is Krishna who is the Absolute Truth? If there's some other entity, if it winds up as Shiva, then you can worship Shiva. If it winds up as Brahma, you worship Brahma. If it winds up that it's impersonal, then you worship the impersonal Brahman. So this is the foundation of Krishna consciousness, that it is Krishna who is that person that is the Absolute Truth, that is omniscient, that is the source of everything, that is fully cognizant, that is giving the intelligence and knowledge to everyone. So the illusory energy is under Krishna. It's his energy. Therefore, he controls it. It does not control him. Then Vyasadeva here explains what that illusion is. Tejo vari mridam yata vinamayo yatra tisar gom risha. And this is the illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water, only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature feel factual, although they are unreal. The material nature is not false, it's temporary. But in the sense that it's temporary, the presentation that it gives, the Mayavadis say that it's false, there's nothing there, it's an illusion. But the illusion is, not that there's nothing there, but the illusion is mistaking one thing for another. Just like you mistake a rope for a snake. It's not that there is nothing there, and it's not that a snake doesn't exist. It's just what you're seeing is not a snake. It's a rope. So similarly, the illusion of the material world is like that. It's like a mirage. When you see a mirage, you're riding down the highway on a hot day, you'll see water, but it's an illusion. It's a mirage. It's not that water does not exist, it's just not there. So that's the illusion of the material world. For example, we look at the bodies. It's not that the bodies don't exist, but they're not the self. They're not the self. So the material world, it exists, but by the transportation of the transformation of the modes of material nature, it creates certain appearances which are actually illusions. For example, we have certain relationships in the world that a particular body is our mother and a particular body is our father, but it's not. These are our eternal relationship is with Krishna, and these are temporary relationships. Our eternal relationship is in the spiritual world. I remember when Hridayananda Maharaj got a letter from his mother that, why don't you become, I don't mind you being a priest, but why don't you come home and be a rabbi? Why do you have to be there? And he wrote very nicely. He said, our eternal relationship is with Krishna. Others are temporary. So this is the illusion of the material world. These are not our real relationships. And this is not, the body is not the self. And even that your house is also not real in that sense. Of course, it's a house, it's a home. But the illusion is that in 40, 50 years, 100 years, it won't be existing. And it can be someone else's house the next day. You can be evicted, or you can move. So this is the illusion of the material world. Let's read. I think it's very important to read how Prabhupada describes this. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the sarup of the Lord manifested by his internal potency. And this potency is distinguished from the external potency which has manifested the cosmic world, which is within our experience. Sri Vyasadeva makes a clear distinction between the two in this shloka. Sri Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, where the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and illusory, like the mirage in the desert. Just like if you look back 1,000 years ago, there was some civilization someplace, and now it doesn't exist. So in that sense, because it's temporary, it's not real, like a wave in the ocean. It's constantly changing, so it has no ultimate reality. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that says the same thing. Nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. Of the temporary, there is no existence. Of the eternal, there is no cessation. In other words, asat, the temporary is asat, it's not real. And the permanent is real. What is permanent is real. If you look at a wave, it's constantly changing. Therefore, it doesn't have a real identity or existence. It's just matter transforming in different ways. But in itself, there's no essence or substance. But the soul is steady. In the spiritual world, things are real. They don't change. That's what they are. They're not just appearances of reality. In the spiritual world, your body is yourself. But here in this world, things are changing. So what's the reality is those material elements and not the appearances that they give. Where in the spiritual world, the reality is that particular object. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. In the desert mirage, there is no actual water. There is only appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The cosmic manifest creation appears as reality, but reality, of which this is but a shadow, is in the spiritual world. Absolute truth is in the spiritual sky, not the material sky. In the material sky, everything is relative truth. That's your father, but then he's not your father, because he's a soul. That body is your father, but then he'll die, and then he's not your father. That's your house. In 100 years, it won't exist. It's not your house. This is your country, then the country will be gone in time. So they're all transient appearances. They're appearances of reality. That is to say, one truth depends on something else. This cosmic creation results from interaction of the three modes in nature, and the temporary manifestations are so created as to present an illusion of reality to the bewildered mind of the conditioned soul, who appears in so many species of life, including the higher demigods like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and so on. In actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality, however, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of God exists with his transcendental paraphernalia. So we should be establishing a relationship with the reality. We should be uncovering our eternal nature, which is the reality of ourselves. And we should be engaged in relationships, ultimately, with God and his devotees, which are permanent, real relationships. So therefore, it says here, I therefore meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existence in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. What is it? Dhamna svena siddha nirasta kuakam. The spiritual world, which has the negation of illusion or the absence of illusion. And therefore the conclusion is satyam param dhimahi, that we should meditate on the absolute truth, which is Krishna. If there's a truth in this world, it's Krishna. Why? Because matter is his energy. That's the truth about the world. The truth about the world is Krishna. And in the material world, maya means not to see Krishna. So the truth of the material world is, when you get free from illusion, is that it's Krishna's. It's Krishna's energy. So therefore, why we should worship Krishna, not the illusion. Param satyam dhimahi. This is bhakti. And by meditating on Krishna, this is how we will awaken reality. Because that's the our reality is that we're his servants. Therefore, by meditating on him, we will become attracted to him and develop the desire to serve him. And this is what Vyasadeva saw. He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Apashyat Purusham Purnam, and he saw the material energy under the control of God, and then he saw the living entity, or the jiva, identifying with matter. And therefore he saw the source of our suffering is the fact that we're in this illusion. And the solution to the suffering is to link ourselves with Krishna by bhakti yoga, so that we develop the desire to become what we are, which is a servant of Krishna, rather than to become what we're not, which is the material body, the controller, and the enjoyer. So this param satyam dhimahi, by meditating on Krishna, then this the inherent desires for devotion in the heart awaken. Now, Prabhupada mentions an interesting thing, too, in this verse, that because Vyasadeva says dhimahi, meditate on the Supreme Absolute Truth, dhimahi indicates the Gayatri Mantra. And the Gayatri Mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people, or bringing you to an advanced state of consciousness. And that advanced state of consciousness is necessary to actually perceive Krishna without any misconceptions, without any projections due to our conditioning. In other words, if we meditate now on Radha and Krishna and their intimate pastimes, due to our experiences, we will not see the reality of that relationship, but we'll see, you know, a material relationship, because that's how we experience things. So Prabhupada mentions, therefore, that it says dhimahi because we have to become qualified. But how do we become qualified? By meditating on the Bhagavatam. The first canto is the Lord's lotus feet. The tenth canto is his smiling face, his head. And his smiling face is the rasa dance. So it gradually elevates our consciousness to that point. So param satyam dhimahi means that we meditate on Krishna beginning with his lotus feet. And we gradually become purified and more qualified. And as we go qualified, then our meditation progresses. So Prabhupada says here, unscrupulous persons go immediately to the tenth canto, especially to the five chapters which describe the Lord's rasa dance. This position of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of this great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in transcendental knowledge, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called rasa dance and his love affairs with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahamsa can transcendentally relish this rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva therefore gives the readers the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes a Gayatri mantra, Dhimahi. This Gayatri mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. When one is successful in chanting the Gayatri mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire brahminical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri mantra successfully and then attain to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord, his name, his fame, his qualities, and so on. In other words, we must come to the mode of goodness to have the proper perception. And the Gayatri mantra is meant for doing that. But at the same time, the Bhagavatam, which is, in one sense, it says the first verse is a Gayatri mantra, or is that type of mantra. He invokes the Gayatri mantra. By meditating on the Bhagavatam, it elevates your consciousness. It makes you qualified. So it says meditate, but there's a qualification for meditation. In other words, meditation will make you more advanced, and then you can have a higher meditation. But you can't begin the higher meditation until you become purified. You have any questions so far?
So just before ending this, I just want to finish a few points that may be left uncovered in the purport. Here it was describing the Gayatri mantra, which indicates that although param satyam dhimahi, we should meditate on the absolute truth, we have to become qualified for the full meditation of the absolute truth. I just discussed that. But still, it's very, very direct and very, very bold, Vyasadeva's statement at the beginning, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Param Satyam Dhimahi, that we should meditate on Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly. And I explained at the beginning of the class, but I wanted to read in the purport how Prabhupada also brings that out. This concept that there's sometimes a gradual process, but Vyasadeva is so bold that directly he says, worship the Absolute Truth. So it says here in the purport, the second page of the purport, it is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. And here what Prabhupada said, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creation. He is not only the creator of the universe, but the destroyer as well. And Prabhupada paraphrases the purport direct. Also on page 46, Prabhupada describes how a reasonable person will accept the absolute truth, that there must be a supreme being. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Vyas, however, at once accepts the supreme intelligence as the Parameshvara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the supreme intelligence addressed as the Para or the Parameshvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshvara is Krishna as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva and specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Vyasadeva at once worships the Paratattva Sri Krishna. His transcendental activities described in the 10th canto. And also this point, that the very first paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada just, because Vyasadeva states that Krishna is the absolute truth, but Prabhupada in the purport describes how this is confirmed throughout all Vedic literatures. I like this statement. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord, And if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means all. Attractive Prabhupada goes through the various books, and he mentions also Krishna Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami, using the Bhagavatam, shows how it establishes Krishna's supremacy. Because really, the tape is at its end, but I just want to finish with a few more points, just maybe special appreciations. How Prabhupada discusses Param Satyam of the Supreme Truth. It's one who has no equal or superior. Therefore, another name of God is Asamordva, which means no one is equal or greater than him. Prabhupada gives that interesting example of how an atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker, but of course God is greater because he can create machines in duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he could approach the intelligence of God. It's a very interesting example that Prabhupada gave. You can almost have the image that, you know, man could be God if he can create like a male Rolex watch, a female Rolex watch, you know, build a little house, put them together, and then after several years have a factory. They go on reproducing themselves. So he gives a little hint in a very practical way of Krishna's intelligence. And then, you know, two other short points in the purport, which you could read in the purport and you should study in the purport, is this Mayavadi argument that the Bhagavatam was not compiled by Vyasadeva, but was a recent creation by someone named Bhopadeva. Bhopadeva was a great poet, sometime maybe 12th, 13th, 14th century. And he composed beautiful poetry in similar meter that the Bhagavatam is in, those beautiful verses like Tavakatamritam, Tapta Jivanam. So Prabhupada refutes that in the purport by quoting Sridhar Swami, who points out there's reference to the Bhagavatam in many of the oldest Puranas, and there's a whole list. That's also an important point to know for preaching, because Bhagavatam is our Purana, our Pramana. It's our ultimate evidence. It's our ultimate method of knowing. So people try to refute this by saying it's a recent creation. But here in the purport, Prabhupada lists all the different examples that Sridhar Swami has quoted. And there's one more interesting point. There's many interesting points. Please read the purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adi Ras, devoid of all mundane inebriety. And this point here, I found that interesting. It says, consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life because they've overstressed the impersonality of the Absolute Truth. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What is the Bhagavatam about? The Bhagavatam is about spiritual sex life. Spiritual sex life has nothing to do with mundane sex life. The same forms are there. The same intensity is there. But the consciousness of spiritual sex life between Radha and Krishna is not lust, but Radharani is thinking, how by my activities can Krishna be pleased? And Krishna is thinking, how by my activities Radharani can be pleased? Nothing to do with mundane lust. But at the same sense, by denying this, denying rasa, denying this exchange of love, as the Mayavadis do, they're indirectly giving impetus to mundane sex life. Because if you can't get the spiritual pleasure, inevitably it will lead to the mundane pleasure. And therefore, Shankaracharya's mission was specifically to increase the population by preaching the Mayavadi philosophy and denying the personality of God and his relationships with his devotees. So Prabhupada brings that out in the purport. You can also study that a little bit more elaborately. Also, this term Adiras, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has shown how this verse in the Bhagavatam can also be, and Jiva Goswami also, can be directly related to Krishna's pastimes in Bhagavatam, in Vrindavan. And I think it's Janma Adi. This Janma Adi, I think he interprets that as the same thing, the Adi Ras. It's one of the Adi Ras, which is you know, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And Jiva Goswami also described how this directly describes Krishna's pastimes. Vyanti yat siriyaha. Even the great sages are bewildered. Even the demigods are bewildered. So that refers to Brahma Vimohan Leela. That's also an interesting point that was presented by Jiva Goswami. Like I said, the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had discussed this verse for 3 months. Jiva Goswami also described how when it says Tri Sargom Rasha, the three abodes where even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. So that's also can refer to the abodes of Krishna, where Krishna, when he plays his flute, the stones melt and the Jamuna freezes and the moon loses shine. So the qualities can change to another's. So in that way, with an interpretation of the verses, it also explains Krishna's lila, where these type of illusions happen by Krishna's potency. Anyway, I think we will end here, but you can see the basic general idea of the verses, that it establishes the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the absolute truth, which is Sri Krishna, and it establishes also the glories of the Bhagavatam, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is about this subject, the Param Satyam Dhimahi. You have any other questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.